Well, that was just to get your waist moving, or get anything moving. That's from deep in the heart of Louisiana, as you know. This was the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, and the tune is Caravan. It's an old jazz standard made famous by Duke Ellington, who was the first to play it on piano, of course. So the Dirty Dozen Brass Band gives us a little lift this Friday as we start off lead stories, and it is your turn. It is Free Your Mind Friday on lead stories. Some work, a little bit of cleanup work we have to do here. Yesterday, our phones went blank. We could not receive any of your calls yesterday. I apologize for that. But there is no telling about technology. And it is not the kind of thing that could have been fixed in a jiffy. So they're working today. So I ask that if you still have something to say from yesterday, certainly make it known today. I also want to remind you at the start, to mark your calendars for Sunday, May the 26th. That's the day I'm going to be in New York. I've been invited by the Global Affairs Committee of the Community Church. This is my second year to give a talk. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. The address is 40 East 35th Street, and that is between Park and Madison. At 12:30, there will be registration. What does registration mean? It means that we know who you are, we know that you were there. There's no cost of any type associated with that. And then we proceed with the talk precisely at 1 o'clock, as we do here every day on PRN. We begin our program at 1 and we maintain the same time. So mark your calendars. We want to see each other. We want to shake each other's hands or give each other a hug or say, oh, so now I see your voice. That's great. But the idea is to continue to build community. And that's what I'm doing, or at least attempting to do. So mark your calendars Make sure you bring somebody else with you so we can show off a little bit. Say, hey, these are the people I hang out with every day from 1 to 2 p.m. Again, it is the 26th of May at the Community Church in Manhattan at 40 East 35th Street. That's between Park and Madison Avenues. We begin the talk at 1 p.m., but registration is a half hour before that at 12:30. That's a piece of cake. It's just saying, hey, here's who I am, and I get to know you, and you get to know me up close and personal. Okay, so that's all the house cleaning I have to do today, but let's get started with Free Your Mind Friday. This is our open forum in which you express yourselves. You say what you're thinking about any particular subject, but I'm hoping that you're reflecting in your expression of thought. There should be some hint that you have done some research to bolster your opinion. Okay? 888-874-4888 is the number to call so that we can begin the program. Ma'at, you start us off today. You're on the air.
Greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
Those of us who are especially night owls and trying to get an eye open in the early afternoon, maybe not this year, but it would be good to also open it up to a webinar. I don't know whether that anybody has discussed that, but a lot of seminars these days, have it, and even the person can participate, So that's something I just want to throw out there because it's obviously an excellent idea, and some of us are dealing with some logistical issues. But I want to first talk on Ilhan Omar. Because I think it's important to look at the context of what
All right,
was said.
first identify her so that people know who you're talking about.
Yes, Ilhan Omar is the one that she's a refugee from Somalia, and she's a Muslim also, and wears the hijab, so she's going to be a target. But at any way, in New York City,
But she is
5,000
also
bodega.
a congresswoman representing a district in Minnesota.
Yes, thank you. In New York City, 5,000 bodega owners, and the Yemenis have joined it. They are looking to boycott and not to sell the New York Post. Because the way I see it, I think, first of all, she was addressing a forum at CAIR, Council for Islamic American Relations, something, the acronym, I think, is that.
So
And she was,
American Islamic Relations.
yes, thank you. And she was addressing them, and if you go to what she actually said and the way she said it, it made absolutely sense because she was dealing with the fact that George W. Bush, he rounded up Muslims, he deported a lot of people that he shouldn't deport, the Sikhs got caught up, and a lot of other people. So she was making the point when she used the phrase of something having happened, was her focus was on what happened to Muslims, nobody, there's no other instance where, white people commit crimes. I mean, look at all the mass shootings these days, 100 and 117 days, and nobody talks about, demonizing white guys. So
What
I
is the
think it's
issue that you're bringing to our attention today? What
the
is your
issue that I'm
opinion?
bringing to my attention is that the New York Post, I would buy it sometimes, but I stay away from it. For them to have put on, and first of all, we know that they didn't tell the truth about September 11th, 01 to begin with. That's important because even if you don't address it directly, something did happen and they didn't tell us exactly what it was.
But
But
you're
my
not
point
telling
is
us
you
what
treat.
your What you're not telling us what your subject is, what your topic is.
My point is that the New York City, you know, we don't own too many of those stores, but 5,000 or 4,000, somewhere in that range, bodega owners, and now Yemeni, because they have a lot of those stores, they have come forward, and they're not going to carry the New York Post. So that's my point. And, of course, okay. Angela Davis and the professor, Barbara Ransor, invited 100 black women, 100 women to stand with her.
Okay, so what is the issue?
Well, the issue is that people are seeing through the nonsense. You know, she also spoke up around Venezuela. She also spoke up around Israel, and considering what they do these days with Trump in hand, you know, I know she's putting herself out there, but I think sometimes you need to do that. That's my point.
Okay, thank you. As you know, I have an entirely different version of Congresswoman Omar, and I believe that she has, in some many instances, she has provoked attacks against her by just not doing things the right way. Almost all of the issues that she has brought to the attention of the public concern Muslims and Muslim identity. And I have no problem with that. But when you, for example, if you read or if you heard the transcript of the interview that she did, I mean, you wonder, my gosh, is this a congresswoman speaking? And what is the point that she's making? The point that she's making is essentially that she's bringing attention to the racism directed at Muslims. And she is raising questions so far that have at their root an issue with Muslims. Now, I'm not saying that that is not the right thing to do, but I have said about Congresswoman Omar in particular that she needs to take some kind of instruction from somebody as to how to navigate that system so that she isn't, as it is now, ensnared in an unending squabble and fight with different aspects of the system. Rather than concentrating on representing her district, rather than concentrating on making sure that she doesn't leave herself open to attack. And she has been leaving herself open to attack since she got into Congress. It's one fight after another fight after another fight, and she's starting it. So at some point she ought to, even though she may know a lot, at some point, she needs to take some advice and learn the method of engaging so that she doesn't end up spending her entire term in office fighting against an increasingly large counter machine. This is not a game, and this is not a game that she could win. It's not going to work. And then you have the problem, the consequence of this, of not thinking things through and not understanding how to deal with a system that has been in existence for centuries. What you ought to do is to decide what you're there in Washington to do. What are you there for? And not get yourself enmeshed in distractions. And that's exactly what she's done. And she's, I hate to say it, but you know, I commented about it here several times. Why are you creating these situations and scenarios where your back is up against the wall and your mouth is doing the work? All you have to do is to concentrate on your job. Now, people may say, well, you know, who are you to tell a congresswoman what to do? I don't presume to tell her what to do. I am observing her inability to control herself. And it feeds directly into all kinds of plans of the opposition. And they'll have her just boxing and boxing and boxing away and frittering away her energy for the rest of her term. I am not, if you read the transcript of her appearance, you can't possibly think that this is a congresswoman speaking with presumed authority. I mean, you just can't wrap your brain around something like that, because it doesn't sound like a person who has her thoughts together. And then she proceeds just the same to engage in battle. You're not armed. You are not armed for battle, not yet. You should be arming yourself, meaning getting into the knowledge of things, looking for advice from people who can steer you through that maze in Washington. That's what you ought to be doing. You should not be running hither and thither, starting fires. You're not ready to start fires. And if you start fires, where are your troops? You're not ready. It's as simple as that. As concerned as you are, as dedicated as you are, as insistent as you are about issues of justice and so forth, you are not ready to engage in battle at this level, not yet. Your seat is barely warm in Congress. You should be immersed in study and getting your act together. As I had asked before, okay, so you feel compelled to raise an issue which you know will be controversial, which you know you will be attacked for. Where are your troops? What money do you have to dedicate to printing literature or doing other things? You're not ready. And she won't understand that. She refuses to understand that. So I have backed off. You know, it's not my responsibility to school a congresswoman. But you can see that the harm that is being done so far, and a lot of harm has been done to her, is harm that came about from her own mouth. As I had said before, I offered some advice, just two words, shut up and get your act together. You're not ready. You're not ready for what is aimed at you. This is not a game. And this is not certainly a situation that ought to be fought with the belief that it is people are going to come behind you and protect you. That's not the way it works. So when you hear about Angela Davis and all these people, you're already off the rails. It's good that they came to your defense, but it means that you are not ready. You have not made yourself ready for battle. And that's my point. We have people who do these things, and they think it's about getting ink in the newspaper and your face on television and your voice on the radio. And that couldn't be further from the truth. When you start a fight, you better be ready for the fight. And if you're starting a fight and you are ill-equipped or you have no ammunition to engage your enemies, it is a lost cause. That's my opinion. I've seen this happen many, many times, and I find it regrettable that no one has schooled her yet on this very fundamental issue, even though she's been in office. She had a state office before being elected to Congress. I was so elated. I was so thrilled when she and others were elected, a fine crop. And in no time, she started this business. Almost every day or every other day, there was some conflagration that she had started. And it is an immense distraction from the work that needs to be done. Immense distraction. So let's hope that somebody gets through to her that she needs to rethink her strategy because it's bad. And she will suffer for it. She will. Well, that's that. You're on the air. This is Lead Stories. What are you freeing your mind of today? Harvey?
Peace. Hi there. Well, as you have heard, Venezuela has the largest proven oil reserves in the world, and I believe that what we're seeing here is nothing less than the Iraq War Part 2. It's the same game, different war. It's all about oil, and the biggest threat to our nation at this time is climate change due to our use of fossil fuels like coal, oil, nuclear, and methane, which are systematically killing thousands of species, including us. The World Health Organization estimates that 4.6 million Americans die each year caused by air pollution, and the California Proposition 65 says that petroleum and their byproducts gives us cancer. And in an article by the National Center for Environmental Information titled Billion Dollar Weather and Climate Disasters during 2018, the U.S. experienced weather disasters to the tune of $91 billion because of climate destabilization like larger and more frequent hurricanes and tornadoes, uncontrolled heat waves and wildfires, especially here in California and other western states, severe flooding and deadly hailstorm storm damage across the Midwest and Texas, unrelenting drought in the southwestern plains, as well as deadly polar vortex disasters sweeping down from the Arctic Circle, and ocean rise due to our Earth's rising temperatures. And one suggestion which will help speed our transition to renewable energy and save a homeowner's a ton of money is to install solar panels on our rooftops. And it turns out that the average payback on a solar electric rooftop installation is approximately 8 to 10 years. But here's the fantastic part. If you buy an electric vehicle and plug it into your solar electric rooftop, the money you save by powering both your home and your electric vehicle, your electric SUV or electric pickup truck, will help to reduce the payback time on your solar installation to about 4 to 5 years, and because solar panels are warranted for 20 to 25 years, once you pay off the solar installation, you get clean, renewable energy, electricity to power both your home and your electric vehicles for the next 15 to 20 years. Free from the sun. It's free energy from the sun. And to find out how much money you'd save just by add up your home electric bill and your gasoline bills for 2018 and multiply them by 15 or 20 years, we're talking about a savings of tens of thousands of dollars, and that's at today's energy cost. And another great thing is that homes that have a solar electric installation sell faster and for more money because they have a built-in solar electric utility. So now is the time to switch away from dirty, polluting fossil fuels like oil, and no more wars for oil, and reinvest in a clean and safe renewable energy future for ourselves, our kids, and future generations. It's time to get star powered. Let's get solar, Utrecht.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for your call and also for your information. From Ohio, Rick, you're on the air.
Hello, yes. Hi, how are you, dear?
How you doing? Oh, fine.
I am well. Hey, your take on Ilhan Omar?
Yes.
Right? That's how you... I think you're completely wrong. It sickens me. Yeah, it sickens me. The only thing I have with her is that I argue that the Constitution trumps all Abrahamic religions. And so that's where I am. I got evicted yesterday, right? I went into court with a female magistrate, black judge. And I asked her, I said, it's pertinent to my case. Let me ask you one question first with the lawyer from the property owner there and the worker from the property. And the white worker male, I have had arguments with him because he tries to convince me there's a proper way to call me nigger, right? This is where I live. And so I asked the black judge, am I 3/5 a person here in your courtroom or am I a full citizen? And she said, she took her glasses off like she was Tyler Durden or something. She took her glasses off and said, that is beneath me. I am not going to lower myself for that question.
And she, okay, and so what is the issue you're raising right now?
That you are in the dark. That you are completely in the dark. I heard you go off against Alexandria Cortez.
Ocasio.
Right?
Cortez, yes.
Ocasio Cortez a couple weeks ago. You know, and you were saying today
Omar. I'm going off on somebody as if I have no control over my brain. I am very cogent in my thoughts. So I'm not going off.
But there's no proof. There is no proof in your speech, sis. Because you were saying that she needs to empower herself. She needs backing. She's got the Constitution. That's all it's required.
You see, you're confusing things completely. I am saying...
You are.
I'm not going to have I say and you say. I'm not going to have that kind of conversation. It's just too elementary for me. The conversation that I had regarding Ocasio-Cortez, including Rashida Tlaib of Michigan and Omar from Minnesota, is, look, you're new. We need you, but we need you to understand how to fight. You don't understand how to fight. And in fact, you are endangering yourself. You're providing ammunition to your enemies to beat you at your own game. All you have to do as a new member of Congress, and they've shown enough I think they've showed enough things to make one concerned about whether it occurs to them that there are certain protocols. It's not whether they're right or they're wrong, it's just that they're protocols. And they communicate something about your level of understanding of how to function in that environment. You're new. You spend your time forging relationships. You spend your time building a base. And I can point to this example, which I had pointed to before. If you're in trouble, can you get 50 people in 15 minutes to assemble anywhere? You can't. Because you don't see that as being important, an important part of establishing yourself. Do you know who to talk to? Who has the best record of getting bills through committee? These are the things you learn because you devote your time, a period of time, to studying and learning to be an effective fighter. You have people just opening up their mouths all over the place and creating distractions all over the place and giving ammunition to their enemies to do them in, which means they're not being counseled. Or they don't see the need to be counseled. I have not yet read or seen anything. You're coming in, you're the new crop. A simple protocol of a reception where the new members are welcomed by the old members. They don't think that that's important. And yet, it is going to save their lives politically. They essentially, there is this undercurrent that they're coming up against even the members of the Congressional Black Caucus, because they think, well, you know, this is a new time. We're the new blood here. We are the ones with the oxygenated blood. We don't have to bow to anybody. We don't have to pay tribute to anybody. Yet, they walked into a situation, no matter what they choose to think about it, involved tremendous sacrifice by those who went before them. They're not behaving like that. From the word go, Rashida Tlaib says, yeah, now let's go impeach this MF-er. Who the heck talks like that? And why should I be expected to support that? And she says this in front of her children and on television for the whole nation to see and hear. I could see that she has backed off of that kind of aggressive, I don't give a crap behavior. But I'm talking about fundamentals, okay? I haven't even gotten to the complex issues. These are fundamentals that they failed at from word go. And people are going to be very upset with what I say. But when you think about it, you see how much we stand to lose when these folks don't get it about protocols and the ways you handle yourself in office and the ways in which you communicate that you indeed are a new breed of legislator. That's what we want. That's what we need desperately. We need smart, savvy people. And we don't see that. They're not acting smartly and with savvy. And yet they're very smart people. But they're not acting like it. I need them to pull themselves up by the scruffs of their necks and get real about how politics works and how you have to build your own fortification. And we can't pretend that these things are not important. And if we do, well, heaven help us, because then we have lost everything. These are basics. And as a group, they failed at the basics. Let's hope they can correct it quickly. That's my criticism. I have no beef with anybody individually, but I'm saying to them and to others, we, especially because of the experiences we have had, we cannot allow this to be the standard. And if people are acting and deciding that whatever I decide is the standard is the standard, then don't be angry when I walk away from you. Don't be angry. Don't be angry. Well, where did Rick go? Okay. Julie from Washington, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Julie. Hello, Eutrice, and to the Lee Stories fan community. I'm usually in New York, but I'm not always so great at getting my thoughts out, but when it's really important, I call anyway. I'm over here in Washington at the Venezuelan Embassy. I'm one of the protectors at with the Embassy Protection Collective, and I want to clarify something that when you're listening to the news, people hear the word occupy used, but we're not occupying this building, and it's not civil disobedience. We're here with the permission of the Venezuelan government, and we're not breaking the law, but we're serving the people of Venezuela. So I wanted to let the Lead Stories community know that, and of course, your listeners know that you can't depend on the corporate media, but we have the Gray Zone and Mint Press embedded with us here. Telesur was here, but they've gone now, and once you go out, you can't get back in. Since the coup fail, the right-wing opposition has occupied the exterior of the building, so they're harassing us and blocking people from getting in and out. So it's something that we're working on. It's quite a challenge, but I wanted to share that with the audience. And also for the people in New York, there's at the People's Forum tonight on West 37th, there's another forum which will be held about Venezuela and where and how we can go from here to help Venezuela. We hope to maybe be able to be Skyped in, because when I was there on April 25th and the Minister of Foreign Affairs spoke with us, they Skyped in the embassy here to that meeting. So hopefully that will happen. I sent an email to Allie, whom I think everybody knows, and she's going to come. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to call today, to encourage listeners from New York that can go to please go and try. You know, we need all the support that we can get. So if you can go, that would be great.
What is the point, Judy, of putting yourself into this effort of protecting the embassy? What are you communicating or hoping to communicate by doing it? By doing this.
We want to keep this embassy so that when diplomatic relations are restored with Venezuela, that the elected government can come back, you know, can send their representatives back here, because it's not a matter of support for Maduro or not support. There were 9 million votes and he received 6 million. So he is the duly elected president. So Guaido received no votes. I'm not experienced with coups. I mean, I'm not, This is something totally new to me. I went to the People's Forum, and I heard the minister speak, and Medea Benjamin was on the Skype and said, come over and be a part of history. And I sort of, you know, Allie and I were in Philadelphia Saturday with Mamiya, with the Mamiya event, and I said, I'm going to go over to the embassy and spend a day and a night. And here I am. That was last Saturday, and here it is Friday. As I got to know more about the collective and the real goal, it is just to keep the embassy, you know, I thought once the coup failed that these people would just go home, but I didn't know about this right wing element that we're dealing with. And of course, from their standpoint, they've had two failed coups, so now they want us out of their embassy. And we are determined to keep it so that it can be returned to the lawful government in Venezuela and not a self-appointed president. We actually thought Wednesday, before it was announced that the coup was over, when I packed up Wednesday, I thought we were going to be arrested, that their ambassador was going to come and speak. And, you know, if the Guaido people had taken over the way they did in New York, but that didn't happen. The coup failed, but now these protesters here that have us, you know, that are, have surrounded the building want the embassy, because that would be something that would be like a win for them, since they've lost the coup. And see, I didn't know. I thought they'd go home and this would be over. They might, you know. So I was pretty naive about that. But once I'm here and I've gotten to become more engaged with the community and I see what the real purpose is, you know, the coup is over and we just want to maintain the embassy for the elected government of Venezuela. That's our goal.
Well, I tell you, that is impressive. How an ordinary person, I don't mean ordinary in a pejorative way, but I mean as someone who is not typically involved in, you know, high stakes politics and so forth, how incredible it is to hear you say, I am not just putting my thoughts here on the line, I'm putting myself into this struggle. What a great thing. And you ought to be commended for it. Thank you so much for calling and sharing with us today.
All right.
Thanks, Julie. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings, Patrice. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Leona.
Yes, ma'am. I have a comment and a couple questions right quick, if you don't mind. I agree with you. What you say, it looks like Representative Rashida Tlaib has backed up a little bit from, you know, her previous behavior. But I'm curious, did you hear that line that was said about Rashida Tlaib calling, you know, President Trump out of his name? The line was, it's not wrong for Congressman Tlaib to call President Trump an MF-er. It's wrong to call that MF-er the president. That was something that struck me as kind of hilarious. But
it's okay to think that.
Serious.
I mean, it's okay to put that in your head, but it does not belong out of the mouth of an elected official. It does not belong in the general,
agreed.
In the general public. Yeah, you don't behave that way.
Yeah, it was surprising. It was shocking. Yes, ma'am. Disagreement with you there. No disagreement with you there, but moving on. There was this reporter called Ben Norton. I caught him on another radio, on another TV show, and he identified this guy named Ricardo Hussman as some kind of millionaire, billionaire person who's helping to orchestrate this coup, quote unquote, coup in Venezuela. Something with the with the oil, wanting to privatize the Venezuelan oil, that's a big motive behind, these efforts. I'm wondering if you've heard that name. And the second and final question was that Monroe Doctrine from back in the day that the USA still, I guess, operates under. considering all of the Western Hemisphere belonging to the United States of America, the whole, the entire continent of South America and North America, and the arrogance and of that. Do you still, do you think that that doctrine is still at play? I mean, how dare the Venezuelans try to be self-determining?
It exists, and the point of it is we know the truth of it, don't we? That whether they deny it exists or whether they deny that that's what they're operating on, we know the truth of it. So nobody could step up to you and say, well, it's a new day and we are dealing with geopolitics in a new way. You know, it's the same old way. It's the same old song.
Yes, ma'am. And I agree with you with that previous caller. That's very admirable, what she's doing. But I'm wondering, what could an everyday person, well, another everyday person, you know, like in Michigan, do to help push back on this injustice?
Well, you call around, and there are different levels of involvement. You have serious problems still in Michigan. You have the issue of tainted water. You have schools that are woefully underperforming. You have a housing issue that is like almost the worst in the nation. You have all kinds of ways to get involved. So we don't have to wait till somebody comes along and defines an issue for us. You're walking around or driving around every day, you see things, and then you can begin to explore more deeply. What is the cause of this? Why do we see so many people out in the street who should be working somewhere? You know, why is it that the buses are now coming every 45 minutes as opposed to every 15 minutes? So there are all kinds of ways in which you can become activated based on what you know a normal community should look like and how it should function. There's a lot of dysfunction. So you just have to, you know, select. Actually, you have to activate your brain to see it this way. You know what I mean? Because if you don't, you wouldn't pay attention to it. You have to be purposeful in looking at communities and seeing for yourself what you think is happening in these communities that's causing all this decay.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate what you just said. I was thinking of, in light of all that you just said and what's happening in Michigan, what's happening, you know, as I step out of this car even, and what's going on in Venezuela, I'm trying to think, you know, well, I guess the question is, you know, how does a drowning man save another drowning man?
But you're not drowning. That's okay. The thing. I wish people would understand. You're not drowning.
Mm-hmm.
You're still able to walk around. You're still able to provide housing for yourself. You're still able to feed yourself and take care of family life and so forth. You're still able to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
So you are not drowning.
Mm-hmm.
What you need to do is to understand, how could I get somebody else who could use my help just up a step or two?
Okay.
And then let them take care of themselves. The issue is not to take care of people, although that is important. The issue is to help people take care of themselves. That's really what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You talk to anybody in distress, yes, they will admit to being in distress and they need help and so forth. But from their heart, what they want more than anything else is to be able to take care of themselves again. That's what they really want. They want to have their own apartment or house. They want to be able to feel comfortable dropping their children off to school if the school is in fact going to be educating their children. They want just the simple things in life. They're not looking to, you know, live like millionaires. No. They want to be able to do the things they used to do and can no longer do for all kinds of reasons. And help with those things is the real help that they need.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you so much for your feedback, Catrice.
Thank you, Leona, for calling in today. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
I was the one that sent you the text yesterday telling your phone system was screwed up. So we were listening to you. We were listening, okay, and trying to get through.
I know. I got a couple of notes. It's so great. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank God you got it, because I think you felt alone. You were lonely on your ship, but you were not alone.
Weird, because I asked the engineer, we communicate to each other, and I said, what's going on with the phones? And then finally he said, there's a problem. I said, okay, I understand.
It rang twice, and then it went right to a busy signal. So that's what kept happening to me. I just wanted to say that I really love the callers today. Thank you. Is it Nancy who's in Washington, D.C., occupying the embassy? Is that her name? The woman who's at the Venezuelan embassy.
That's Julie.
I'm sorry, a little senior moment. Thank you so much. I think it's wonderful. And I had an epiphany, an idea, and maybe this is what Venezuela wants us to do. I think that everybody should go to the assembly, the building. And I think as many people as we can get inside and outside of the building would be wonderful, because I think it would show an American solidarity with the people that are being victimized by these creeps in our government. And I think that it might even swing some news cameras in the direction of getting some real news, because all I have seen and heard is propaganda, and I'm like just about up to here with it, trying to tell people. It's really hard to encapsulate the situation into like 3-minute conversations to tell people, no, that's not really what's happening. Here is what's going on, and guide them to the right sources so they can actually find these facts. But that is what I've been trying to do. So that's on my mind, and I think I want to go down there too. Inside or out, I don't care. But I think I also wanted to mention that Tom Hartman the other night was, I was listening, I can't sleep anymore, so I'm up with Tom at 2 o'clock in the morning. he's a good soulmate at 2 o'clock in the morning. Although I hate the music, it's too loud. But what he was talking about, these are old shows, but they're still relevant, and that is that the tremendous amount of children that have been lost on purpose in the United States and now are in interim camps, and I think that he is correct to call them that. They're in these camps. They're actually, some of them are working for like $1 a day, and there is a total lack of willingness to try to put these children back together with their parents. And so I started to talk to a woman this morning at the coffee shop about this, and I really don't think the government is going to do this, but I personally am going to try to make it my mission to try to get these kids, at least some of them, back with their mothers and fathers, because I do think it's unbelievable. And the government is saying that the reason why they don't want to reunite them is that they're saying that it would be traumatizing for them having been taken away. Bullshit. It's totally nonsense, okay? But that is, believe it or not, that is their excuse for not reuniting these children with their parents. And in the meantime, I believe 3 have died. There are several children have gone out to human traffickers, because nobody's looking into the background of these people. And the policy is simply a policy that is supposed to be so bad that it will deter people from coming up anymore. So
update our nomenclature too. We should understand that these are not just children. These are hostages.
Yes, they are. And I think we should use the correct terms, because, you know, as Tom pointed this out, and I think he's right, that this is what was going on in Germany. Before there were extermination camps, there were internment camps. And so what we have are 4,000 children up to the ages of, I guess, like 16 or maybe 18 that are being held against their will in these camps. Now they're doing labor just like they do in prison. And by the way, every day that they are in these places, each child, we spend $700 per day on expense to the private prison system, which is keeping them. And for that, they get the luxury of sitting in a dog cage and getting a tinfoil blanket and suffering their broken heart. So I just wanted to just say that I really want to do, and I am going to start to take steps to do what I can do. Some lady at the coffee shop had a really good idea saying that maybe we could do like wanted posters on the internet if we could find the kids' pictures to try to like circulate photographs of people that are missing, just the way they do with other missing children, because essentially that is what's happened. They are missing and no one actually knows where they are. It's pretty much, as you said, it's a kidnapping.
And it is going to be used as a negotiating point in future negotiations. That's really what I think is happening. They hold on to the children because the children are worth a lot in terms yeah. of how countries will be negotiating with each other. And if you ignore them, it's like they don't exist. You pay attention to the adults, but not really the children, but it is the children who have the great value here.
Yeah, I know. And you know, any parent will pay any price to get back their child.
Absolutely. And any nation would pay the price to get back their own children. You see?
I believe
so
that too.
This is the undercurrent that's going on here too. Thanks, Gwen, for your call today. Well, that
Happy
brings
Friday.
Us to the end of our program. However, I see we have a lot of folks who did not get a chance to speak today, but you know, you should don't despair. We will get this done. As you know, I value your input. I value what you're saying, and I value the interaction between you and what you're thinking and the rest of us. So if you didn't get a chance to talk today, and that is why, you know, you give people the space they need, which is why we, quote, run out of time sometimes. But people need the space to say what they have to say. And it goes for everybody, right across the board. So let me thank you for calling in today and encourage you to call back again with your thoughts if you didn't get a chance to share them today. I apologize, but this is how life works. Enjoy your weekend. Surround yourselves with people who mean great things. And see each other Monday. Bye-bye.